It's a great privilege to be here with you guys. I'm excited for today. The European Leadership Forum is a great place. I've been there many times and have lots of friends and connections through that as well. And I love how they call this online workshop a masterclass. It makes it sound really grand and amazing. Yeah. But what I really hope is that this would be a time that would really encourage your faith, would give you fresh vision, maybe some new ideas. And I'd love it to be interactive. So like Emmanuel shared, please do send in some questions for me to be able to interact with you. My favorite thing on a Zoom is to be able to see you guys and interact. But for this setup, we're doing it this way. In fact, if the team here permits me, I'd also say, even if it's not a question, if you have a comment or something you'd like to just share that relates to what I'm saying, go for it, because I'd love to just interact with you guys a bit. As Emmanuel said, I'm the European leader for Steiger, and I love what we do because I think, you know, and it relates a bit to the video that was just shown from the ELF. We live in a time where culture has shifted and secularism has become the major worldview. And especially for the younger generation, we've grown up in this. And I'm talking about, you know, in Steiger, we reach right from teenagers, young people, but mostly young adults. So people in their 20s, university students and young professionals. And we've grown up in this. We've grown up in an environment that tells us that nobody really knows if there's a God. And if there is one, he doesn't really seem to interact or be relevant to our day-to-day lives. And we just get on with life. And I really want to speak into that culture today, and I want to show and remember together here how the gospel is powerful today to respond to every idea, every lie in our culture, and how it's so needed to be shared today to the next generation. It's not fair that people today don't get the chance to hear who Jesus is in a way that they can understand. And that's what we're about at Steiger. We're really combining cultural relevance, understanding secular culture and youth culture, being where people are. We have teams in cities all around the world. Emmanuel shared the European context. Beyond that, it's a global mission. We have things in around 150 cities happening at the moment. And our teams are engaging in the secular culture of the cities, sharing the gospel in a way that is relevant to that culture. So we're combining that cultural relevance with boldness to preach the gospel, because we believe the gospel is powerful and it needs to be made accessible to people today. And before I get into some of the content here, just to share a story to exemplify that, at the end of 2021, I was able to go and share with a group of pastors and leaders in Oslo, in Norway. And, you know, they'd asked me to talk about evangelism, to talk about the gospel and in secular culture. And I just shared, you know, from a story in the gospel of John, and talked about Jesus's heart for the lost and how he would go to people and show himself to them. And we talked about the need for the gospel to be made public again today. I talked about how for many years we've seen evangelism as a come to us activity. So we do something really cool. We put on a great event in our church or an evangelistic concert or event. And we say to believers, you know, bring your friends and they'll come to us and then we'll share the gospel. But we're in a time where increasingly people just don't walk into a church, right? They're not interested, even if you invite them. And so I talked about how evangelism, missions, sharing Jesus today needs to be a lot more, let's go to them instead of them come to us. And when I finished talking to a room of just over 100 pastors and leaders in Oslo, and a number of them came up to me afterwards, and we had a powerful time of prayer. We were on our knees praying for Oslo, crying out to God that he would move again in power, that we would see the gospel being preached and people coming to him. And it was a powerful time. And after that, some of the pastors came over to me and they said, what you talked about is so important here. It touched me. And they said, we haven't preached the gospel publicly in the way you described for many years, since the 90s or before. And we need this again. Would you come and do something here for us to make the gospel public? So we prayed together for that idea. And we came with some of our Steiger team to Oslo on a number of occasions last year in 2022. and we built up towards it, did some training with the young adults in the church, and we ended up with a big event called Hope for Oslo in June. And we ended up gathering around, exactly 692 participants from all over Norway and Europe. And we went for a week-long sharing the gospel on the streets through concerts, through street evangelism, through Bible studies and meetings. And we ended up sharing the gospel with over 3,500 people through one-on-one conversations. And we saw incredible fruit from that. We do a performance on the streets where we show the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus in a creative, dynamic way with electronic music and rap and dance. And I remember one guy who came over and watched the concert. And at the end, we do a good old school Billy Graham, come to Jesus, come forward if you want to know Jesus. And he came to receive prayer. And he said to us, he said, on the other side of the bridge, there was a river there, said, on the other side of the bridge, I was an atheist. And I came over here and heard a message that's spoken so strongly to my heart that I don't think I can call myself an atheist anymore. And we saw so many stories like that happening in Oslo. And this was during Pride Week. So there were lots of people on the street that needed to hear that God loves them. It was an incredible, impactful time. That work's continued. The churches in Oslo really owned Hope for Oslo, and they've continued doing evangelistic actions after that. They sometimes send me stories or videos of people getting baptized, and we're starting a Steiger team there as well, and doing a few things in other cities in Norway. So that's what I pray for. To see more of that, to see us, European church, stepping outside the four walls of the church and making the gospel public today. And I want to start in this first talk, just I'm going to share my screen now. And I want to share with you, to start with, some thoughts about our culture, about secular culture and how that affects us. And then we'll dig into how the gospel responds to that. And I call this talk, The Seven Lies of the Global Youth Culture. And what I mean by global youth culture is the younger generation growing up in secularism. I'm going to talk about seven ideas that I believe are lies in our culture and how the gospel responds to them. So lie number one, we can only be sure of what we see. Now, this is materialism, right? This is the idea that we can only have certainty of physical things, things we see, things we can buy. And we grow up in this environment where we're told that if you can buy it, if it's your career, if it's certain things of the material world, then we believe in absolutes. We believe in truth. We believe that you can be sure. But when it comes to anything beyond that, that nobody knows. There's uncertainty. So if it's a question I can Google and find the answer, then I can be sure of it. But if it's the kind of question Google wouldn't know how to answer, then nobody knows. But of course, this means the biggest questions in life, like, why am I here? Or who am I? Where do I come from? And is there a God, or is there a bigger purpose to life? These big questions, we're told in our culture that nobody knows. You can't be sure. And so we're left with this sense of anxiety, of emptiness, of not being able to know for sure what life is really about. This leads to a second lie, that we're here by accident. Because if nobody can answer the biggest questions of life, if nobody can tell me who I am or why I'm here or if there's a God, then we come to a conclusion. Maybe there is no answer. Maybe there is no big purpose or big point to life. And most people might not say it this way, like, I'm here by accident, but it's an idea underlying their worldview, their culture, the way they feel in this world today. They're saying, I don't know if there is any reason to my life, if there's any big purpose. I don't really know who I am or how to define that. So maybe I'm here by accident. And we're taught this throughout life, in schools, in universities, through social media, through everything. This is a religion of our times. It is what is preached everywhere. So even if I've never really thought much about it, it's there. It's this idea that maybe there is no big purpose to life, no big reason. Now, you might think, well, how do we live with that? If so much uncertainty, and a sense of lack of purpose. How do I deal with it? Well, we deal with it with another idea in our culture, that despite that, everything's going to be okay. So just live your life, enjoy your life, find a passion, find a hobby, find something that you like. Or maybe if you find that person that is the right person for you and you have a good romantic relationship, or if you find the right career, everything's going to be okay. But this is a leap of faith that doesn't have ground for it. And when trouble comes, when pandemic comes or war starts or a personal crisis, then suddenly we feel like the ground, there's no ground to stand on. The carpet is pulled from beneath our feet, and we feel so uncertain and insecure. The idea that everything is going to be okay falls apart very quickly. It's an idea that leads us in many ways to addictions, because it leads us to feel like we have to find an answer in something. And so we try to fill ourselves with the things of this material world around us. And so it might be addictions to video game or to social media or pornography or whatever it may be. And this is inside the church as well as outside. It's affecting us everywhere. So, you know, when I talk about global youth culture or secular culture, it's not a us versus them or us and them. This is us. This is what we've grown up in. This is inside the church. Pornography is destroying families and ministry, video games, social media, entertainment, just trying to live our lives has become the distraction that stops us from going further, from digging deeper, from finding out if there is something more, if there is truth. And it affects us way deeper than this. It affects crucial parts of our identity and who we are. Lie number four is that I can be whoever I want to be. And this relates to the other lies as well. Because again, if I do not have the answers to the biggest questions, if I don't know if there is a God or if there's a purpose, I also don't know who I am. And this is communicated in a positive way through our education, through social media and entertainment again, because it sounds so freeing. This sounds like freedom to our culture. I can be whoever I want to be. Sounds like, yeah, this is our times of freedom. I can be the hero of the story. It's what every Hollywood movie preaches. It's what every song talks about. But in reality, this has become the heaviest burden that our culture carries, the heaviest burden of this generation, because it's like being dropped in an abyss. It's like being told, hey, there are millions of options. Be whoever you want to be. Nobody can tell you. Nobody can give you a reference or an idea of what's right and wrong. So just figure it out all on your own. And this generation is desperate and often feeling depression, suicidal, because we cannot define anymore who we are, and we're lost and confused by that. Another lie related to all of this affects our worldview and our faith, because we're told it doesn't matter what you believe. See, I was told this throughout university. I kept talking about my faith in class, and I was told that in that realm of education and of my profession, I couldn't bring my faith into that. And they would say, you know, everybody has their own belief, and so just keep it to yourself. And yet I found I couldn't do that. It was a crucial part of who I was. And I came to realize that what I believe really matters. It changes how I study, how I work, how I live life. And it's true, not just for me as a follower of Jesus. It was true for all my friends in university as well. What they believed changed what they did. And so it's a lie that kills our passion and our desire to change. Lie number six, it affects our relationships. Because if you can't define purpose and identity, you also can't define love. And so nobody knows what love is anymore. And we say love is love, and love is just a passing feeling. And so our relationships become fluid and broken, and people don't know how to truly belong anymore. They don't know how to love and have real relationships anymore. All of this might be different if there was a God, if there was something more, if there was truth, if I could find something beyond all of this. But there's another problem with that idea. There's a barrier to that idea of finding God, which is lie number seven, that to find God, you have to be religious. Again, I'm talking about this secular culture around us. You've probably found this. The more, very often when I share my faith, I tell somebody about God or about my faith in Jesus, often the response will be, well, that's great for you. I'm glad that you believe that, but I'm not religious. And what people often mean by this word religious is they think of a culture or a tradition that they don't identify with anymore. They might think of the church their grandparents went to, or something they went to maybe when they were kids, or something they've seen through, you know, media, through a TV series. And they just go, you know, maybe there's a God, but I just couldn't be religious. That's just not me. I don't identify with that space. And so they feel like they can't access. It's not accessible to them. It's not available for them to see and to discover. And so this lie is a barrier for them to find God. And actually today it's become worse than that. There was a time where at least Christianity in Europe was seen to have some kind of morality, of moral high ground. And people would say, you know, I'm not religious. I'm not good enough to be a religious person. But today that's shifted also where it's inverted and people don't see the church or Christianity as having a moral ground. They actually see the Christians also even as immoral because they've decided that with the shift in culture that it's bigotry and to talk about an exclusive truth is arrogant. And so and they see, you know, they see the church as hating LGBT community and etc. And so they see, well, being religious is being a bad person. And so I don't want to be religious. And all of this creates a barrier for people to find the loving God who made them and who is there for them and that they don't have access to. And so this is a generation growing up with a deep heartfelt need of wanting to find meaning and not knowing how, wanting to belong and not having that anywhere, feeling very lost and confused by it. But that's the dark side. And I want to share the positive side before we take a break. We start a little bit late. I'm going to go over a little bit on this. I want to show the opportunities that we have today. This is a band from the UK. They would not call themselves believers. They'd say they were atheists or agnostics, but their lyrics are deeply spiritual. I have a hole in my soul growing deeper. The loneliness is haunting me and the weight of the world is getting harder to hold up. Who will fix me now? Save me from myself. Don't let me drown. I find this amazing because it's a culture that has put me and myself in the center is saying, save me from myself. Don't let me drown. So there's a cry here. There is a spiritual hunger in this generation. And so if you forget everything else I say, remember this, that this generation is spiritually hungry. They're looking for answers. They're ready. They need to hear. And the second thing, that the gospel is powerful to respond to all of these ideas today. There is an openness in this generation. And I want to briefly watch this short video that shows that a little bit more.
Look at us. Just a bunch of kids that are screen obsessed. Disconnected. Not in the moment, right? Because, like, how can a generation that lives online know anything about the real world? We're just clicking and swiping our way through life. Phones in our hands, and our heads in the cloud. But nothing
ever stops. More than half of the world population is under the age of 30. So I believe it to be
a moral obligation to involve youth in decision-making processes.
Well, you know what? When it comes to what we really care about, the difference we can make means even more now.
Let's just let it go. So maybe next time
they see us staring at a screen. on it.
Quiet when I'm coming home.
Why don't we show them what we're doing with it?
I could lie, say I like it.
What I see in that video is a generation that wants a better world. They want to change things. They want to find meaning. They want to belong. They want to save the planet. They fight for values, human rights, equality, justice, peace, love. They want a better world, but in many ways, they don't know how to find it. And that's, again, showing that spiritual hunger and also showing something of God in them, in this generation, in this culture. Like C.S. Lewis said, if I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. So it's a generation that is defending values that this world is not offering them, that they don't see in this world. And it points to something bigger and something beyond. And so that's why there is an opportunity, there is an openness, there is a hunger. And I found that that's an incredible way to engage with this culture, to understand that there's common ground, there's a desire for change. Often when I talk to people on the streets, for example, we do a lot of street evangelism. People will say, oh, I'm not religious, you know, it's not for me. And I'll say, well, that's fine, but what do you believe in then? And very often the answer will be something around human rights. It'll be, oh, I believe, you know, we need to love each other, we need to fight for a better world, or I believe in human rights. And I'll often continue that conversation with something along the lines of asking, well, where do you think those things come from? And how would it be possible for us to live with such values? And of course, if we dig a bit deeper, we know that things, the values and ideas of something like human rights or love and peace and equality can come from nowhere else but from the gospel of Jesus, from Christianity, from the cross, from the most powerful being in the universe dying the death of a slave and making access to God equal for all people who come to the cross. And that's equality, that's justice, that's love, that's what this generation is looking for. And the gospel is powerful to respond to it. And in the next talk, I'll talk about how the gospel can and does respond to this, and we'll get a bit practical as well.